Chapter 16. We Misunderstand Our World. I've told you already about the law of yoga and of life, that when important good things are starting to happen, then powerful bad things are stirred up too, and they come and try to stop the good things. Maybe it has something to do with the channels beginning to open up. I don't know. Maybe the bad channels fight back, fighting for their very existence. And so on the same night that the captain and I first attacked our selfishness together, down inside the channels, the sergeant came to the door of the shed as I slept. Long Life growled, and I woke up instantly. It was quite late and a windy night as the summer rains approached. The moon, though, was nearly full, and I could make out the sergeant's form in a second. His smell, the smell of the liquor, seemed to fill the room in the very first moment. And Long Life was ready to leap, but I caught him by the end of the little rope I always kept tied around his neck for the old lady's sake. "Don't be afraid," the sergeant laughed lowly. "Nothing to worry about. Just thought we could talk, and..." His outline weaved unsteadily in the doorway, and he stepped inside. He had a clay jug in one hand, and his other hand reached out in the dark, groping. It was too late to try to reason with him. Long Life and I had been through a lot together. We had a special sign for emergencies. I would yell a word in our language, "Bam!" and then we'd both be up and gone. "Long Life, bam!" I cried, and jumped up off the bed. The sergeant lunged clumsily. I turned sideways, knocked the loom over on him, and ran to the door. Long Life flashed under the sergeant's legs, dragging the rope behind him, and then we were out in the moonlight, headed towards open country. We just ran, and I thought there was no way we could head back in the direction of the jail and the main road. Too many people there, and Don wasn't far away. But working over the fields the other way was just as bad. I knew from experience that the tracks would be easy to follow come morning. And then I remembered something my grandmother used to say about the best place to hide, something being right out in the open. And so I stopped at the bridge, close to the old woman's house, and we both crawled under. We would stay there 2, even 3 days, right in the middle where the search would begin. And when they were all far away following false trails, we'd choose the quietest way on to Varanasi. I had to leave the book and the notes. I knew Katrin would have agreed. I would write out as much as I could remember later when we reached the new teacher. And so we waited, tense at first and then dozing off at times. I decided after a while that the sergeant had probably just gone back home, finished off the jug, and fallen asleep. I curled up tight, pressing my little lion's warmth to my chest, as far back under the bridge as we could squeeze. Something woke me up, a premonition. I looked out to the side, to where the shadow of the bridge ended, and the moonlight began. There was a tiny sliver of silver there, in the light, white, curled like a snake. I stared at it for a long moment before I realized what it was, the other end of Long Life's rope. I started up to pull it in, and then a hand came down off the bridge, lightning fast. The rope snapped tight, and Long Life's little body was ripped from my arms, up the bridge. I scrambled out into the night. I can hear Long Life choking and gasping for his life, hanging in the air. "I will kill him," the sergeant says. "I know it. You will come with me now, back to the jail. Promise it. I promise. Let him go." And he drops Long Life into the mud there, convulsing, shuddering, flailing in the mud. And I get down into it too, shaking and trying to tear the rope loose from his neck. And he looks up at me with sad, helpless eyes. And I take him in my arms like a child, and we follow off behind the dark sergeant back to our jail. The sergeant was up early in the morning, went out for about an hour, and returned with the old woman. When the captain came in, the sergeant went straight to his office with the woman, and then after a while, they came back out, and the woman left without so much as a glance in my direction. Then the captain had the sergeant bring me in and asked him to leave and shut the door. I told you very clearly never try to escape. But I didn't, sir. I just ran away because...
Ran away,
but not to escape? Not like that, Captain. It was the sergeant. He was drunk. He came to my room while I was asleep.
Enough, he exclaimed. That's not the way I heard it. I have two witnesses who say you tried to escape.
Witnesses?
The old woman saw you run. She went and found the sergeant, who did good work to catch you before the others did. You should be grateful to him.
That is not what happened, I said, calmly, a special kind of stillness coming on me, as it did sometimes. They are lying to you.
The captain fixed his eyes on me sternly, but the truth was in my own. He looked down.
We shall see. But for now, I cannot ignore the word of an officer of the realm and of a senior resident of this town.
He looked up at the ceiling with a kind of sadness in his eyes, kept them there for a silent moment, and then brought them back down to my face.
And so, he faltered, and so, it is my duty to inform you that you are now found guilty of breaking the laws of the king in regard to escaping from custody, and will now be held in this facility as a convicted prisoner for an indefinite length of time.
Explanations, objections, expressions of outrage flew through my mind at this idiotic decision in this idiotic little town with these idiotic, inept officers. And then the stillness came back and silenced them. This was not what it seemed to be. This is not what it seemed to be. It had reason, it had cause, and now was the time to practice yoga. Real yoga, the way my teacher had trained me to do.
I see, I said steadily. Prisoner, here, indefinite period of time, perhaps very long. I understand.
The captain cocked his head.
You don't seem to be very concerned.
Concerned, yes, I replied. Upset, no.
And why not?
Because it won't change what's happening, but something else will. And so there is something else I have to do to change this.
Change what?
I looked around quietly, and the words came to me out of the quiet. I will have to change this, I said with an unshakable feeling of confidence, waving my arms around.
The captain looked around despite himself.
Change this? He repeated.
This, the jail.
I will change the jail, I said.
How? He said, almost entranced.
How will you change the jail?
I will... The words poured through me, unbeckoned. I will make inside the jail outside the jail, I said softly.
The captain leaned back then, with an unsure smile.
You mean you will do your best to take all that is in all of this in a positive light? You will try to imagine, perhaps, that you are somewhere else, even as you sit in your cell?
I fixed a cold look on him. Laced of steel like Katrin's.
That is not what I said at all, Captain.
I said I will make the inside of the jail the outside of the jail. Am I not clear? Do you not understand my words?
I do understand what you say, but not what it means.
And until you understand, I said harshly, you will never understand yoga. You will never understand how it really works, and you will carry your bad back and all the disappointments of your life with you to the grave.
He looked at me with a sadness that said he felt how it was true, and I couldn't just leave him there like that. He was my student, no matter what. We shared that sacred bond already, and he was a human, another living being, in pain. And that bond we had shared from time with no beginning.
It will come, I said. I will teach you. Goodness knows we will probably have enough time now.
I paused and collected myself. We were about to enter the borders of real yoga, and we had to go carefully.
You need to hear something now, and then I will leave, and you need to think about it for a while. He nodded, as though this kind of conversation under these circumstances were something that happened to him every day. The master says in his short book, I glanced toward those lovely pages at his elbow. The master says that we misunderstand our world. Things that are not themselves seem to us as if they were. You make less and less sense, he said, with a touch of impatience. Perhaps you are really upset. Perhaps you need to rest. Let me call. Silence, I said. Goodness itself was being born, and wrongness sought to stop it. The jail is the jail is the jail itself. The captain looked wounded, and then he thought for a moment. Of course it is, he replied. Everything is itself. Meaning? I demanded. Meaning that in the jail's case, I suppose that the jail is itself and not something else. It is a place where you are put when you've done something wrong, and once you're inside the jail, you no longer have freedom, no freedom to go outside the jail. And so, for example, I returned, the person inside the jail could never be experiencing perfect freedom there, and the people outside the jail could never be experiencing the torment of absolute bondage there. The inside could never become the outside. The outside could never become the inside. Because the inside is itself, I breathed, leaning over his desk into his very eyes, and the outside is itself, leaning into his very being, or so it seems, I finished quietly, and then I stood and looked down at him. You may call the sergeant now, I said. Chapter 17. The pen again. I didn't waste any time with the sergeant. Events had drawn us all now into real yoga, into how yoga actually works, and I wasn't about to upset that happy circumstance over something as insignificant as food. I also didn't want to put Busuku or his lovely boys into any more danger on my account. Sergeant, I said calmly, touching his arm again, and he jumped and glared at me wickedly. I will need food. I will need a way to get food. He nodded. His eyes gleamed like a wolf's. I need you to get me a loom. Any old loom will do. Even that worn-out one at the woman's house. He opened his mouth to object. I moved quickly. Thank you, grandmother. You see, if I have a loom here in my cell, I can start to weave some real rugs. I can weave the kind of rugs we make in my country, in Tibet. They are thicker than five of your old woman's rugs, softer to sit on, with a beauty you cannot imagine. One rug will bring you more money in the market than dozens of hers. The sergeant's mouth closed slowly, and he calculated. He was cruel, or perhaps just in some kind of incredible pain, as cruel people always are. But he was not stupid. I suppose that could be arranged, he said slowly. And I will need yarn, balls of yarn, lots of colors. He hesitated. Selling a rug was one thing. Picking out balls of yarn in the marketplace surrounded by housewives was another. Just send one of the boys, Ravi, called out Busuku from the other side of the wall. Shut up, Busuku, snarled the sergeant. But I saw his eyes that he would do exactly that. And soon the boys began bringing me a tray, too, although I must say it was always much smaller than my portly neighbors. At our next class, I sat the captain down on his blanket, and first we did some silent sitting, working on the giving and taking to help his two men. Then we did a straight hour of some very simple work, just bending toes and fingers and ankles and wrists and shoulders and neck. After his rest at the end, he looked bright and refreshed, but then started to frown a bit. Was that yoga? He asked. I laughed. Closer to yoga than all the exercises you've been doing, for your particular needs at this moment. But I was afraid not to start you with the exercises you'd probably already seen somewhere. I thought you'd think I didn't know anything about yoga, and then I'd never get my book back, and I let it go there. We sat through an awkward pause. It's really just another part of yoga, I said finally, like so many things are. And today we must continue with what we were talking about, because if it is at the bottom of how yoga actually works, and if you understand that, then your back will be healed. And then you can go on and heal the others as well. The captain surveyed my face thoughtfully and said, I'm glad to continue with that. To tell you the truth, when I got home and tried to think about what was wrong with a thing being itself, I couldn't see it the way I could when you were first saying it. I nodded. This was the way it went with everyone who tried to learn this crucial idea. At least he was working on it himself at home. That would help a lot. Then I sat still for a moment and tried to think carefully of how Katrin would have expressed it. This had been my teacher's favorite subject. Come and sit at the desk, I began, and we settled down across from each other. There was a paper lying there, half covered with the beginnings of a report. I wondered for a moment if I were in there somewhere, and off to one side stood a little clay inkpot and the captain's pen. It was like the ones back home, just a thin shaft of fresh bamboo sharpened at one end, and I could see a large jar on the floor filled with others. And as Katrin, that beloved being, had done, I picked up the pen and held it up between us. What is this thing? A pen, of course. And is the pen itself? Yes, of course it is. Itself by itself? As all things are, he affirmed. There, that's it. You did it just then, I said. Did what? He asked, his eyes looking around him. You turned it around, I said. Turned it around? Your mind turned it around. And the master says, as he begins his short book about yoga, in perhaps the most important of all important lines of that wonderful book, he says, yoga is learning to stop how the mind turns things around. I laughed, as I hadn't laughed in months. At least there was some magic still left in the world. I skipped to the window and looked down. About 5 feet to the ground, there was a huge black cow with his head craning up to the straggly little mango tree growing outside the wall, trying to strip it of its last few green leaves. Corporal! Corporal! Front and center! Cried the captain. The corporal burst through the door instantly, as if he might have been leaning up against it all along, eavesdropping on our class. Sir, he gasped. Corporal, get outside and remove the cow at my window from the facility grounds. I can hardly hear myself think. I saw the corporal instinctively rub his leg. I looked out at the cow, big, black, huge, long black ears bent oddly like cow's wings or crow's wings, a mother with full udder and babies to feed, and so persistent, very persistent. It occurred to me that she'd probably kicked the corporal and pooped on him. Captain, sir, no, I pleaded. It's perfect. We need her. We need the cow for a moment or two. Need her? That nuisance? Whined my perplexed student. We need her, yes, I said again. Corporal, he bellowed again. Sir, trumpeted back the young man with the click of his heels. Cancel that order. The cow stays where it is. Stays, yes, eating the last leaves of the tree. Yes, sir. And Corporal? Sir, do an about face, go out the door, close the door softly, step over to the bench on the other side, sit down and do nothing, absolutely nothing until I call for you. Am I understood? Sir, sit and do nothing, right away, sir. And he was gone, and the two of us sighed in relief. I leaned out the window and pulled off a few fat leaves and threw them over on the ground to keep Mrs. Cow engaged. Then I returned quickly to the desk and held up the pen once more. Again, this is a pen. Itself? itself, and by itself, how else? Observe, I said, for this was exactly what Katrine had said to me. Come, come, I urged the captain. We stood side by side and leaned out the window together, close together, and I glanced to the side at the dark black curls of his hair and his capable features, and suddenly realized that he looked very much like my father. And I felt a pang go through my heart. Almost 3 years now, 3 long years since I'd last seen my family. Chuk chuk, I called my lady, the cow. She looked up with that grizzled face and spread her floppy ears out uncertainly. Oh, I'll not hurt you, I crooned. Just another treat for you. I held up the captain's nice new green bamboo pen. The captain's eyebrows arched and he began to open his mouth, but it was too late. Her huge slobbery tongue was out in a second, enveloping the bamboo, and then there was a crunching sound and a swallow, followed by that inevitable pleading look for more. I threw her down a few more leaves and hurried the captain back to his desk. I pulled another pen out of his jar on the floor, and I held it up. Again, what is it? A pen, he insisted, beginning to sound a little defensive. Itself? Itself! By itself? By itself! And so it's a pen to the cow as well? The captain looked a little confused. He glanced toward the window and licked his lips, and then he said a little hesitantly, I don't think you can say it's a pen to the cow. I don't think she saw it as a pen, really. On the contrary, I boomed, trying to imitate Katrin's expression at the same juncture. The face and the steel eyes so clear I could almost cry. Isn't it true that she saw it as something different, something completely different? Isn't it true that she saw it as something to eat? Well, yes, I suppose, the captain stumbled. Suppose? Say it. Admit it. It wasn't a pen to her at all. Well, no, I guess. I mean, no. Quite right. You're quite correct, he admitted. So, you see it as a pen, and she sees it as something to eat, and who is right? Which one is right? Is it a pen, or is it something to eat? Which one is it really? I insisted. He looked stumped for a moment, and then answered a little more surely. I don't think you could say that either one of us was right, really. It just looks one way to her and another way to me. I guess you could say that what it is depends on who's looking at it, he concluded, and looked to see if I approved. But he wasn't getting off that easily. So then it's not a pen, I said. Well, no, not to everyone, he replied. And so it's not itself. The pen is not itself, I dragged him on. Well, not itself in that sense, he agreed. Not itself by itself, am I right? Not itself by itself. So that even the cow would see it as a pen, am I right? Well, I suppose, I mean, well, yes, you're right, he said, chewing a little on his bottom lip, thinking hard. I pointed down at his desk, time to come to his rescue. What's that paper, I asked. A report, he replied cautiously, a report to the superintendent. And is the report itself, is it a report made by itself? Well, no. I made the report. I take a blank piece of paper, then I write things on it, and as I write it, it becomes a report. No report is a report by itself. I held up the report in one hand and the pen in the other. But don't you see? I breathed with excitement, the same excitement that had filled my teacher's face on the day Katrin had taken me down this same path. Don't you see that the pen is the same as the report? No, I don't see, he said, sensing the excitement and frustrated that he couldn't share it. The pen is like the report, you see. You are making it. You are writing it. It's just a little green piece of stick, and then your eyes come along and your mind comes along and thinks of it as a pen and turns it into a pen and makes it a pen. I paused to see if he could pick up the idea and finish it, and by goodness he did. Ah, yes, I see. And the cow, her mind, is different, you see, and her mind makes the same green stick into something to eat.
And if it was a pen, if it was a pen by itself, well, then she'd see it as a pen too, and everyone would. Things are not themselves, he whispered. Amazing. I never thought of that. And then, after a long pause, he added, but what's this got to do with fixing my bad back? He said. Everything, I replied. Later, he laughed. Think on it, I said, and returned to my cell, where the inside had just begun to become the outside. Chapter 18. Out there, over there. You remember I said there was one worse thought, worse even than selfishness, the root of selfishness, really, and that it blocks up the winds in the channels and causes the pain in your back, causes every form of pain, really physical or mental? You did mention that, said the captain. Well, that's it. That's the thought. It's the way of thinking that turns things around. And the master is saying that the very purpose and meaning of yoga is to stop the way the mind turns things around, to stop that way of thinking. Well, he observed, it makes sense that the goal of yoga would be to stop a way of thinking that ties up your channels and causes problems like my back. That would make the poses, the exercises, which we usually think of as yoga, sort of a partner working for the same goal, knocking at the pipes from the outside while we fix the wind thoughts on the inside. Exactly, I replied, and waited for the question. There's one thing that bothers me, though, he continued. I can see how sitting quietly every day and practicing scenes in my mind where I take problems away from others and then destroy them inside my heart could have a powerful effect on those inner winds, especially if they are tied to my thoughts. And the same for mentally sending people the things I think they'd like most. But I don't see how the thing with the pen ties in the same way. I mean, I realize that there's something about my own mind that makes me see a particular piece of green stick as a pen, and I realize there's something about that blasted cow's mind that makes her see the same stick as something she might want for dessert. And so I realize that the pen wasn't that way I thought it was. I mean, I see there's a part of my mind that's always been turning things around in a way, making me think things are themselves by themselves, when really things are themselves only because my mind draws them in a certain way. But I don't see any clear plan of action like I did with the practicing thoughts of kindness, for example. I don't see anything I could practice to get better at and which would make me get better, the way that, say, doing the poses every day helps me. And when he said that, it suddenly dawned on both of us that he really was getting much better. He hardly ever held his back with his hand anymore as he talked. The bags under his eyes were fading. He was sleeping again. The problem was with getting well sometimes is that it doesn't announce itself, say, the way that hurting your back announces itself in the first place. Ah, yoga teachers, even when we succeed with someone, are so rarely appreciated. You need to see the larger picture, I answered. And then we'll have a plan of action, one that actually goes to the core of why your back hurts at all. I thought that was the channels, he said. The channels and those inner winds and things getting choked up. I thought that was at the bottom of everything. Well, there's bottoms. And there's bottoms, I said. We just have to keep going until we really get to the bottom. So we'll start from the beginning, I said. Let's start from the womb. Let's start way back at your mother's womb. He settled back to listen, fixing his eyes on me carefully. Now again, the worst of all bad thoughts, the worst of all ways of thinking, really, is thinking that things could be themselves by themselves. The worst of all ways of thinking is thinking that things could be themselves by themselves. It's what the master called misunderstanding our world. And it's the worst kind of thought because it chokes up your channels and lies at the bottom of every other negative thought that chokes the channels.
And ultimately, these choke points are what cause every kind of sickness and sadness, too. The first thing you need to know about this habit of misunderstanding everything around us is that we were born with it. Everybody has it, from the womb. In a very subtle way, it actually shapes our development in the womb, since at that stage it is already causing choke points around which important features of our body form. Like layers of ice forming over the contours of a twig, completed my brilliant student, and I gave him a brilliant smile of encouragement. He really was doing well with both the yoga and the ideas behind it. And even in the womb, even in the very first thoughts we have there, basic impressions of the warmth or pressure inside our mother, this way of thinking begins to assert itself again, and it infects every single thought or perception we will ever have for the rest of our lives. At this stage, when it goes from being a seed to being a large active part of our minds, we give it a special name. We call it selfness. The master describes it like this. Selfness is where the strong impression of someone seeing something and the something someone sees makes it seem as if each one were itself.
Whew, said the captain. That's a little much. Looks like it, but not really, I said. I'll be quiet for a moment. Don't be lazy and wait for me to explain everything. I want you to try to tell me what you think it means.
And so we sat for a moment, and he really thought about how his world was really happening to him. Such a precious moment, so rare for us once we grow up into adults. I think I've got it, he said finally, trying to hold on to his young ideas. Go ahead, I said softly.
Well, it's so strong, you see, and I think that's what the master is saying. First of all, I mean, when you first held the pen up and asked me what it was, I didn't have the vaguest feeling that my mind could be playing a constant role in making it a pen. It just looked like it was over there, by itself, a pen. He laid his hand upon the pen on his desk. And then that I was over here, and he put his other hand on his chest. And so each one of us just looked like, well, like ourselves, really. The pen being itself out there, being looked at, and me being myself over here looking at it. I mean, that impression, that sense of division is so strong that until you made that big point with the cow, I simply never realized that I make the pen itself. My mind makes the pen, just as the cow's mind draws the same green stick into something good to eat. I couldn't have said it better myself, I cried. Now think on that for the next week. Chew on it.
Didn't think of it as something to eat, he grinned. I gave him back one of Katrin's dour old smiles.
Try to catch yourself doing it from time to time during the day, turning things around. Your mind is making you see them as they are. But just because they're out there, I pointed. Over there, I pointed. Then it makes us think they are what they are by themselves, on their side.
Will you try it? I asked.
I'll try it, he answered. The captain was being such a good boy that I treated him to a monster yoga session until he was standing in a good-sized pool of sweat. And yes, what a teacher sees as a treat may not look like a treat to the student, you see. Have to watch out for those ideas of selfness about things. Chapter 19. Even for those who understand.
I want to check on something, said the captain at our next class, something about the idea of selfness.
Go ahead, he said with confidence. He'd been practicing, I could tell, looking at the things around him, considering how completely different they might look and therefore be to other people or other creatures, and realizing that it was really something in his own mind that made them what they were to himself. When I said the idea of selfness is a mistake that we make all day long, you know I'm talking about everything around us, right? I mean, thinking that a pen is itself by itself, that your desk is itself by itself, and so on. I don't mean the idea of selfness is just about yourself, right? Yes, of course, he said, but of course it does apply to myself and to other people too, doesn't it? It was a statement, not a question. I let him follow his thought further. I mean, I was thinking about it, like we could take the corporal, for example, or more specifically, the way the corporal talks. Now, when I hear him talk, and he talks so slowly and simply, it drives me crazy. I can hardly remember the first half of one of his sentences by the time he gets around to the second half. He really feels like he has to go step by step very deliberately until he's said what he's has to say. And it annoys me to no end that he can't seem to make a leap or a twist of thought. But that same way of expressing himself, you see, might strike someone else as very straightforward and reassuring. I would guess, for example, that his mother might see it that way. And so we can say that each person's mind is also making them see the people around them and even themselves as they are. That people are no more themselves than the things are themselves by themselves. Perfect, I said. And I'll tell you something very important, although it's not really what we need to cover today. Do you remember back when we talked about the channels of the sun and the moon, about the two channels that run down your back on either side of the main channel? I recall, he said. They were the bad guys, full of bad thoughts, negative thoughts, and the more full they get, the more choke points they cause. Right. Now, you understand something more about them. When you look at something around you and feel it has to be by itself, has to be itself by itself, that it can't be your mind making it the way it is, then the thought winds in the sun channel are stirred up and start to choke your health and happiness. And when you look at people or their thoughts themselves, you see, and even at yourself and your thoughts, and feel that they are the way they are by themselves and not because of your own mind seeing them that way, well, that stirs up the winds in your moon channel and it starts to choke you. The captain looked for a moment like he'd eaten a very large lunch, but I gave him a minute or two to go over it again. He even swallowed largely once or twice and then seemed to achieve some kind of idea digestion. And then the questions came. But most of us, and if you were right when you said we were born thinking this way, we think this wrong way all the time? He breathed. We do, I said simply. And it begins to choke us, even from the womb. Didn't you ever wonder what makes people get older? He stared at me as the implications began to dawn on him. And I left it at that for a moment, as a seed which would blossom into a beautiful flower. But let's get back on track, I began. I'm glad you brought up that thing about the difference between how the corporal looks to you and how he looks to his mother. And just to check one thing on that, is the way you see him right or is the way his mother sees him right? Pen or something good to eat? I asked, pointing to the green bamboo stick on his desk. Depends on who's looking, he answered. Or you could say, he was showing off now, that the corporal is neither way by himself or both ways to different people. I raised an eyebrow in admiration. But now, you see, when we get to things that we feel strongly about, things that either really hurt us or make us feel good, then that feeling that they are the way they are by themselves from their own side, it gets really strong, you see. And it starts to cause serious problems. And then what we were calling misunderstanding your world as a seed and the idea of selfness as it began to take hold of your mind even in the womb graduates to a whole different negative way of thinking, to something we call grasping. And the master explains grasping like this. Grasping is a thought that comes on all of its own,
even for those who understand, and then grows even stronger. You see, when something really annoys you, like the way the corporal speaks, then it's very difficult to keep in mind this idea that it's your own mind that's making you see it that way, even if you already understand this idea very clearly. If you stop and think about it, if you reflect on it, then you know that the way the corporal talks is actually just like the pen because I waited for him to finish. Because there's the example of the way his mother feels about the very same thing. She loves it. Which proves that the way the corporal talks can't be annoying or lovable from its own side by itself. My mind makes me see it as annoying. Her mind makes her see it as endearing, concluded the captain. Exactly. But we tend to forget all of that when something makes us either very happy or very unhappy. And then that old misunderstanding comes up in almost automatically, all on its own. We feel like the corporal must be irritating from his own side by himself, not because our mind is making us see it that way. We grasp to that feeling. And if you think about it, it's a lot easier to get upset if someone steps on your toe than if you stub the toe yourself. If you can keep in mind that it's your own mind making you see the corporal as annoying, you might be able to stop yourself from getting upset. Choking your channels, hurting yourself, he added. Right. But even people who understand all of this, they forget, and then their feelings start to escalate. Start to get stronger, and then? Later, he asked. Later, I nodded. Cook that for a week, and then we'll go on. And then we did our giving and taking and our poses, regular as clockwork.